Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Get a Job. I am your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a career life management coach with over 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their goals. The purpose of our show is always to provide job seekers with the best practices and give you some ideas about how you can adapt them to your personal circumstances. So whether you are at the very start of your career looking for your very first job or mid-career, no matter what industry you're targeting, we are here to help you. So I'm prepared to take your calls, answer your specific questions. So get out a pen, write this number down. If there's anything through the course of the evening that you've got some questions about, you can call us at 646-716-9397. Now, I am, over the last several months, I've been great good fortune to be out promoting my book, Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success. And it's really been very exciting. I've at the risk of being a bit boastful, I've been on CNN and Fox Business News and NPR and a number of different radio stations across the country. And it's been exciting and exhilarating and just a little tiny bit frustrating. And I'll tell you, it's frustrating because, as a general rule, you're invited to be on these shows and tell us everything you know about, you know, how to get a job or whatever their topic might be, and building your professional brand or interviewing or networking or resumes, and you've got 4 minutes, the four-minute segment. And so it's very frustrating because, as any of you who have listened to the show before know, the quick answer to almost any job search-related question is, well, it depends. And you need a little bit more time to flesh it out to be able to give meaningful information. In 4 to 6 minutes, pretty much all I can give are sort of very generic advice, a little bit, you know, platitudes, and a couple of go-get-em kind of inspirations. So, finally occurred to me, I've got my own show. And I can spend more than 4 to 6 minutes giving you some of this information. So tonight we are guest-free because I want to share with you the topic is, you know, with this being the fall, how can you take advantage of this busy recruiting season? What should you be doing today? And rather than just let you listen to it on CNN and only get 4 minutes, I'm going to give you a full hour's worth and try and jam-pack a lot of information in, but really by the time the show is over, you're going to know exactly what you need to do when you wake up tomorrow morning to get your job search started and just really very much launched. So again, happy to take your calls, 646-716-9397. Now, before we get started, the one thing I did want to do is just take a moment given what day it is. September 11th is one of those very difficult days for so many people, myself being one of them, having an office on Wall Street. It's a very hard day. And it's one of those days that we want to just take a moment to pause to think of all those people who lost their lives needlessly. One of the, you know, I hate to use the word benefits, but, you know, if any good came from that whole horrible experience, it's that this day has come as sort of a marker for most people to just stop and reflect for a moment. Having, again, been in career counseling, career coaching, even back in 2001, this event really led people to pause and ask themselves, what's really important in my life? So with that as our backdrop, as we start thinking about job hunting and what it is you need to be doing, just it offers us an opportunity to just keep all of this in perspective a little bit and to really make some choices about how you want to live your life going forward. So it's just a good moment to pause. So, as I said, the fall is the busiest hiring season of the year. And most people think that it's the first of the year after, you know, everybody comes out with their goals and it's New Year's resolutions, this is the year I'm going to find a new job. But actually, from an employer point of view, it's the fall. This is, you know, we're entering into the fourth quarter. So employers are now looking at sort of the goals and everything that they set up in January, and they're looking, saying, okay, we've got this budget left over. We need to hire people so that we don't lose that head count, as they would say. So if we're going to hire, we better do it now. And so they're really kind of spring into action. So between now and usually just around Thanksgiving, things are pretty active. So you may start to see a lot of activity. What I want to do is give you some ideas on the 10 things that you need to be doing so that you can be taking advantage of this fall hiring season. And we want to talk, as I'm sort of telling you the things you need to be doing, also going to try and give you some ideas on how to overcome all the different obstacles that we hear about why you can't get a job. There is, people talk about, I can't get a job because I'm, you know, right out of college, I've got no experience. Or I work with a lot of people or the other extreme saying I've got too much experience and people won't hire me. And technology, of course, has made things challenging in many ways. People often say my resume goes into that great big black hole. And so really want to give you the tools that you need to ensure that you achieve your goal of having a new job before the end of the year. So the very first thing you need to be doing, if you've not already done this, and hopefully you've been listening all along and have done this during the summer months, but if you've not done it yet, you have to do self-assessment. And I cannot emphasize this enough, and when I only get 4 minutes on CNN to talk about it, this is the thing that I talk about, because this is the step that everybody misses. People who need a job think that self-assessment is a luxury. I really haven't got time to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. I just need a job. I need to pay my rent. But you have to know what you want and why you want it and what you're willing to do to get it. And so it's not just, I'm not encouraging anyone to sort of sit around for weeks and months and years just navel-gazing, trying to come up with something very amorphous. I want it to be really practical for you, but you have to know what do you want and what are you willing to do to get it. Some people will refer to this as, you know, fulfilling their life purpose. Some people will just talk about, well, these are my goals and objectives. Other people have a more spiritual bent about it, and they talk about it as God's plan for them. I don't care what you call it, but you have to know what are your gifts and talents and how are you meant to use them in the world. And that's the thing, on when you focus on you, that is the step you cannot miss in this whole process. Because if you don't know what it is that you have to sell to people, you don't know what you're good at and why you really want it, what drives you, what motivates you, you can't figure that out. If you've not done that yet, then you're going to have a hard time. The rest of these things just don't go well. It's all very clunky. So really, if you've only got a couple of days, this is what you want to do. I want you to start right now by identifying what is your dream. What's the dream job? Don't worry for the moment that it's not practical. We'll get you to practical. But you have to start with what is the dream. Once you know what the dream is, the next question is, why do you want it? Why is that the most important thing? What do you need to do to get it? Let's map out the action steps. Then are you willing to do those things? If the answer is, I'm not willing to do those things, then you got to go back to the why do you want it? Because we want to find out what is the motivator. So, for example, let's say that you have an accounting degree and you have decided what you really want, what the dream is to be a prima ballerina, but you've not danced since you were 7 years old. So my first question is not, oh, don't be silly, you haven't danced since you're 7 years old. I'm going to ask you, why do you want that? And you might tell me, because I love the dance, I like to be around dancers, it's just relaxing, it's just I love those people. Great. well, what do you have to do to get it? Well, you know, I'd have to dance every day. I'd have to join a dance studio. I'd have to lose 20 pounds, whatever it might be. Are you willing to do those things? Well, no, really, I'm not. Well, then why do you want to be a dancer? Again, because I like being around dancers. I like that world. What's another way to do that? What's another way to be around dancers without being on the stage? Now we get a little closer to the goal. So you're not giving up your dream. We're using that dream to figure out what's next. And I always tell this story because I think it's a comical story. I was out with a group of friends one night, and one of the men who I had just met had just lost his job. And another friend said, oh, you should talk to Kathleen. She's a career coach. She can help you figure out what to do. And, of course, we were all drinking wine, and everybody was being silly. So I said to him, well, what do you want to do, Jim? And he said, I want to be a pirate. So, of course, everybody started laughing and joking and, you know, making pirate jokes. And I turned to him and I said, you know, Jim, if we were in my office, I wouldn't be laughing. I would say, what is it about being a pirate that's appealing to you? And all of a sudden the conversation turned serious. And we started talking about the sense of adventure and being out on the water and, you know, things like that. Well, this is a man who's an environmental engineer. And he's got a job where he is out taking water samples and things in the ocean. So there's still a sense of adventure. So we joke. We said he really did get a job as a pirate. So the point is don't underestimate the power of dreams, because your dreams, starting with the dream, helps you to get further along in the process. For those of you who that feels just way too touchy-feely and you don't even know how to dream because you're just a little too practical and left brain about the whole thing, there's something that you can do. You might, if you can't kind of conjure up an image for yourself, what you might want to do is take a self-assessment tool, something that gives you data about yourself. And the best one that I know of that I use all the time with clients, I think is incredibly helpful, is something called the Highlands Ability Battery. You can check that out at highlandsco.com. And we did an entire show, I think it was the second episode, just on the Highlands Ability Battery to talk about that. But that what that does for people who don't want to do the whole dreaming and kind of getting in touch and just trying to imagine, it provides you with hard data that you can use and say, oh, okay, objectively, there's some information here that says I should be focused on these kinds of work environments that allow me to do these kinds of tasks. And so that, for a lot of people, that's a good place. If you don't know how to start, that's a great place to start. As I go through this and I talk about some of the shows that we've already done referencing this, I do just want you to know you can find any of my archive shows by going to my website, careerplanners.net, and clicking on the Blog Talk Radio show link, and it'll take you to all the different shows. We are also available on iTunes if you're an iTunes person. But, okay, let us assume now that you have done that piece of things for yourself. So now you've done your assessment, and you have a fairly good sense of what it is that you want, why you want it, what you have to do to get it, and you're kind of raring to go. Now the next thing you need to do, and this is incredibly important, is you need to do your research. You know what you have to sell. Now you have to figure out who's going to buy this. So, obviously, you want to be checking out the job boards. So you find not just Indeed, which is a great one, or The Ladders is another one that's a paid-for-service. There are a number of good sort of generic job boards out there. But the other piece that you want to do is look for niche job boards. So, for example, if you are a lawyer, you might want to be looking at Law Crossings in addition to Indeed. If you are an accountant, there are likely to be niche websites specifically for accountants. When you don't know where to start when you're doing your research, start simply with Google. You can just Google jobs for accountants, and then you'll see the Indeeds and Hot Jobs are going to come up. But usually if you scroll down a little lower on the page, the Google search, you're going to find those kind of niche job boards. So certainly that's something that you absolutely want to do. If you're not even quite sure, you know, if you're just starting out and you don't even know what kind of job title you might be looking for, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has a great website called the Occupation Finder. And if you could just Google the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupation Finder, and you will come up with the link. What's so fabulous about that particular one is it will it has just, I think it's 152 sort of subject matters that you can then click on, and it will tell you a whole host of information about where those job opportunities are likely to be, what kind of different settings, what the outlook is for the next 10 years or so. It's the what the salary ranges are likely to be, the growth opportunities, and the various different places where you can do those jobs. So those are things that you absolutely want to, if you haven't already looked at that, that's something that you should absolutely find. The other thing, and this just amazed me when we did the show on research, we had a librarian from the Burlington County Library system in here. And I've been doing this for a long time, and I had such an aha moment when Joan was on our show, because Joan mentioned that every county library system in the country has access to premium databases worth thousands of dollars that anybody who owns a library card can access for free. So Google, as fabulous as Google is, Google's only going to take you so far. Now you can go to log on to the library system once you have your library card, and you can get a whole host of premium databases. And two in particular that she mentioned that I have since used, which I think are great, one is called Reference USA Business Directories Online. And what that is, it's a suite of directories of every U.S. employer. And it also includes government nonprofit entities. So you've got this great laundry list of different possible employers. And you can tailor searches by industry, by size, by location, and get detailed information about the companies, including contact names of people, management, all of that kind of stuff. That's helpful because it goes a little bit deeper than just the job boards. A lot of, you know, and we keep hearing this on the news all the time, many companies these days are not big companies. There's a lot of small businesses where they've got, you know, 50 employees that they don't necessarily have a career section on their website, or they don't always post positions. But if they connect with the right candidate and they can see a business reason for hiring someone, well, it's about being in the right place at the right time. So if you're only looking at the big companies like J.P. Morgan and Deloitte, fabulous places to work, but they're just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the number of employers that are out there. So Reference USA Business Directories Online. The other one that she mentioned, and I don't know what it stands for, but it is called EBSCO Regional Business News. The reason this one is so important is because it will allow you to search by geography to find out what the leading industries in a particular place are. So if you're saying, oh, I live out in Suffolk County, Long Island, and I want to know what the top industries are out here, you can run a search, and it will be helpful. So if you haven't already done this, tomorrow morning, go to the library. Get yourself a library card. Make nice with the reference librarian. This is free. They have so many job search resources. You know, each county is a little bit different in terms of exactly what they offer, but many of them will offer resume writing services, you know, they'll maybe do interview programs, all of those kind of things. So take advantage of it. It's all free, and if you're looking for a job, just putting yourself out there in the path of other people, very helpful. So certainly something you want to be doing. Now, So now you've done your self-assessment, you know what you want, what you need in your life to be happy, you have a general sense of what God's plan is for you and your life purpose and goals and all of that, and you've done your research and you have a general idea of what's going on in the marketplace and perhaps who needs what it is that you have to sell. Now your challenge is to translate your wants and needs into benefits for the employer. I'm going to say that again. You must translate your wants and needs into benefits for the employer. It's interesting because, again, in my four-minute segments, sometimes that gets lost. So I'm talking about how important self-assessment is and what do you want, what's important to you, how do you want to live your life, and all of that. But when you walk into an interview or when you're talking to people the kind of job that you're looking for, if you're only saying, I want to work at this company because it's 15 minutes from my house, it pays $120,000 a year, and it'll look good on my resume, those things are all true, and they may be the things, those driving forces for you, which are important, but that does not tell the employer what value you bring to him or her. So once you know all that about yourself and you've done that introspection, now it's time to shift your focus and begin to become a bit more employer-focused. They don't care about your mortgage. They don't care about your kids in college. They don't care that you need the experience. They don't care about those things. They want to know, and what you need to be able to say is, I can offer any employer these three skills, expertise, characteristics to help them achieve their goal of X. So let me say that again. I can offer these three skills, characteristics, areas of expertise to help the employer achieve their goal of X. You have got to be crystal clear about that. Now, that's slightly awkward language. I'm not sure you're going to say it exactly like that, but that is the kernel of what you are trying, the information that you have got to be able to sell. It's about, and I suspect some of you may have heard this expression before, you got to whiff people. What's in it for them? You have got to always be thinking in terms of what's the benefit to the other person who's listening to you in terms of hiring you. Okay? So we've got our self-assessment, you've done your research, and now you're translating this into benefits for the employer. Now, here's where we get into the good stuff, because one of the challenges we often have is, and it's usually at this point when I'm working with clients, when they say, well, this is all very fine and good, Kathleen. I know what I'm good at. I know who should need what it is, and I know what benefits I have to offer them, and I can articulate those things, but I can't get a job because. And this is where all the job search myths come in. And we want to talk a little bit about them. I often talk with people about where they're stuck. And, there are external obstacles and there are internal obstacles. So let's talk about the internal obstacles first, because it's the internal obstacles. Once we can figure out our way around the internal obstacles, we usually can figure out a path around the external ones, right? So I think in terms of what are the nails that got you stuck. So the first nail, if you will, begins with an N, is negative talk. It's that little voice inside your head that tells you you can't because. You know, you can't because, I can't get a job because I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm not smart enough, I went to the wrong school, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not thin enough, whatever it might be. When we listen to that I'm not enough voice, what really we're focusing on is the fear, not the possibility. So our first challenge is to figure out, how do we challenge that voice? Ask yourself, what makes me think I'm not good enough? How true is that? What's another way to look at that? So when we ask ourselves I don't have any experience. So I don't have any experience. There's a fear around that when we say things like that out loud. I don't have any experience, so they're not going to hire me. What do you have is the question I have. Even those of you who have never worked and are just coming right out of school, maybe you don't have experience to offer, but you have knowledge. You've got personal characteristics of hard work and energy and enthusiasm and interest and passion. Tell that. So we all have different gifts and strengths, and it's your job as the job seeker to be able to tell people why you can, not why you can't. So we all have that little voice in our head that, you know, I've been working for many, many years, my friends, and every now and again I get that little voice. I've managed to shush her quite a bit. But I get it too. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You, why would anybody hire you? You can't. What do you know? Why would they listen to you? When that voice pops up, I stop for a moment and ask what's really going on. It usually means I'm afraid of something. I'm afraid of being rejected. I'm afraid that I'm not going to know exactly how to do it, that I'm out of my comfort zone. So I challenge that voice. You know, what makes me think I can't do it? Why can't I do it? And try to reframe it. And remind myself that I am good enough, and we're all good enough just the way we are. The second nail is an assumption that we make. Sometimes we hold on to an expectation that because something's happened before, it's going to happen again. So again, we ask a question, how true is that belief? So you might think, well, I've gone on interviews before, and I always come in second place, so I'm just assuming it's going to happen again. Assumptions are real, and they are worthy to explore, but if you accept them at face value, they're going to hold you back. They're going to be a nail all the time. So what you always want to do is ask yourself when there's an assumption, how true is that? What evidence do I have that because it's happened twice, it's going to happen again? I always chuckle and say horse racing is based on the assumption of past performance, right? And many dollars have been lost at a racetrack, even though they're basing it on the past performance. So assumptions don't always work. I also, you know, it's interesting. I was working with a client earlier this week as well, and we were talking about some change that he was trying to accomplish, and he was struggling a bit. And he said to me, well, research shows that I'm not likely to get this. And okay, research is, but why buy into that? You know, because it is, you know, statistically maybe it's harder for someone over 50 to get a job. Statistically, that may be true, but there still are people who get those jobs. So rather than say to yourself, I'm going to be the one who doesn't get the job, why can't you be in the smaller, you know, that smaller pool? It's all in how you frame it. So it's really about, you know, when you see those assumptions about what the way the world works, ask, how can I be the exception to that rule? And I will tell you, and I say this to my clients all the time, I'm in a position, given the type of work that I do, that I see the exceptions to the rule. It's very hard for you as an individual job seeker to believe that because you're only, you know, doing things based on your own experience. But I have that perspective, the broad perspective of seeing people who should never have gotten a job if you were following statistics because they didn't have the best grades, they didn't go to the best school, they did everything wrong, but somehow something went right for them. Statistically, it shouldn't have worked, and it did. So I always want to encourage all of you, be the exception to the rule. It's possible, you just have to believe it's possible. The other thing, the next nail that kind of keeps us stuck is interpretations. A lot of times we form opinions and judgments and believe them to be true without any investigation. So I always say, well, why not test your hypothesis by asking a question? And probably the biggest interpretation people make without doing any investigation is saying, I'm not going to apply for that job because it probably doesn't pay as much money as I want to make. Or, they're never going to hire somebody with my background. Maybe. That could be. But what are you basing that on? So why not test that hypothesis by asking a question or by taking an action? Maybe there's another way to interpret things. You know, another big interpretation people make and this one I always chuckle at this because this is so real. You know, someone doesn't return your phone call. Someone who said they would be helpful to you, and now you've reached out to them two or three times, and they're still not getting back to you. So, of course, the interpretation is, well, they're not interested. If they're interested, they would return my call. I don't want to bother them, and so we don't bother anymore. Well, maybe they don't want to talk to you, but maybe there's an alternative way to view that. And how many times have I heard people say, you know, somebody finally got back to them after, you know, I don't know, the fourth or fifth try, and it was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, I was a trial. Or, you know, my mom just died, and I couldn't take any calls, or whatever it might be. So it isn't always about you. Sometimes there is something else going on. And so just accepting that that may very well be the case, you know, it allows you to find an alternative way to view the situation and think about things. I want to share just one other story about interpretations, just to give you a sense, again, of sort of all the exceptions to the rules that I get to see. I was working with one young man who was interested in a position up in Albany, New York, and we were in New York City. And he had a great interview with these folks, and everybody was psyched, and he was psyched, and they said, we'll get back to you, and then dead air for so long. They never got back to him. And so he was kind of bummed, and he tried following up two or three times and couldn't quite get through. So he was ready to give up. A couple weeks later, he had another interview with a different company, also in Albany, and I said, you know, when you go up there, why not call those other folks and tell them you're in town and, you know, you'd like to stop by. Oh, I don't know. You know, if they were interested, they would have gotten back. Let's just try it anyway. And he did. And, of course, they were, oh, yeah, we're so excited. We're so glad you're here. We still haven't made any decisions, blah, 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 blah. And, again, weeks have gone by now, and he still hasn't heard anything. So he, of course, was interpreting it that they're not interested. So this happened one more time. He went back up there for another place and actually got an offer from the other place. And I said, call them and tell them that you've got another offer and that they're your first choice and see what happens, you know, what the heck. And that's exactly what he did, and P.S., that's where he is today. So, again, if he said to me, if I had stopped when I was planning to stop, you know, but for your encouragement, I never would call those people a second time, let alone a third time. So your interpretations may not always be exactly right. So question them, challenge them. You know, ask a friend for a reality check. That's why a lot of times with some of these things, it's really helpful to work with a coach or again, the librarian. You know, there are people that are accessible to you, someone else who could be a little bit of a reality check for you. But my favorite now is a limiting belief. And the limiting belief are these things that you accept about life, about yourself, about the world of work, that just hold you back. And it is that belief that employers don't hire anybody over 50, or it's an old boys club and women don't stand a chance, or, you know, young people have no loyalty these days. Again, the question always is, how true is that? And you want to always strive to be the exception to the rule. Now, everybody struggles with the nails to varying degrees. We all have them, so you're never going to get rid of them. But what we want to do is loosen them. And the trick to moving past the I can't achieve my goals because stage of things is to become aware of the things that are interfering with your success. So when you feel yourself being stuck, the thing you can do is ask yourself a question. How true is that? Is there another way to look at that? So always ask yourself that question. Challenge your own thinking. Even when you ask that, is there another way to look at that? Just brainstorm other possibilities. Even if you don't wholeheartedly believe the other possibilities, just knowing that there are alternative perspectives out there helps to loosen the grip of those nails a little bit and allows you to take an action that's going to propel you a little bit closer to success. But if you buy into them and you keep yourself stuck, I'm never going to get hired because I've got no experience, and you just can't possibly look at any other alternatives to that, you're not going to be able to move past it. Because if you believe it, then it's going to happen. And there is an expression that you may have heard, you know, the law of attraction. What you put out there in the world, you get. So if you put out there, it's never going to happen, it never happens. If you put out there, I'm going to find a way to make it happen, you will find a way to make it happen. And I know that that sounds so unbelievably simplistic to most people, but again, you got to believe. If you believe, other people will believe as well. Because remember, if you don't think you're worthy of getting hired, neither is anybody else. Your job is to help people. All right, so I'm just going to give you the number again in case anybody wants to call in. It's 646-716-9397. So, again, these mails, you know, it's going to be a little bit ongoing, but you want to ask yourself that question. That's going to help you get unstuck. So the next thing, our fifth thing that you might need to be doing is you need to be building your professional brand. Now, this is a sort of term of art, and everybody goes, oh, what exactly does that mean? Your professional brand is a conscious choice that you make about what you want people to think about you. So you want to think about that. What are the three adjectives that I want people to always think about me, about? And everything that you do should support that professional brand. So if you're brand spanking new, right out of college, the three things maybe that you want everybody to know about you is that you've got leadership skills because you were head of student government, you were the president of your sorority, and you're, you know, a youth minister at your church. Right? So you've got leadership abilities. That's the one thing you want them to know. You also want them to know that you are very likable and tell them a story about, how much people admire and like you and sort of your interactions. You can tell stories that, you know, tell people that, you know, say people like me, but you tell stories about your involvement and that show that likability that you have. And maybe you want to tell them about an expertise that you have because you studied a particular subject matter in college. Those are the three things that you want people to know about you. So now everything you do needs to support that professional brand, particularly that likability one. Now that means everybody, you need to be nice to everybody, because if it becomes uncovered that you're telling everybody, oh, yes, I'm a really nice person, and then we're looking on your Facebook page and we see posts that are anything but nice, well, now you're not supporting your brand. Now you're sending up mixed messages and mixed signals about yourself. So think about that and make the conscious choice about what you want people to think about you. You have the opportunity to control your own story. Whether your story is the very beginning and you're just starting your career, or even those of you who have perhaps are at a stage where you've had a couple of missteps and things that you now feel the need to explain, and you're embarrassed about something, and how do you tell that story is very critical to how people are going to perceive you. And I will share one other story. I was at an event one day, and it was an event for job seekers. And I went to hear the speakers and what it is that they had to say. So I'm sitting at the table, and now here's a place, obviously, where people can be honest, and it was a safe space. And I met one guy, and he presented to me as Larry Loser. So I said, what's your story? I asked a very upbeat, kind of neutral question. I was a CFO, and I lost my job, and it's terrible, and I got two kids in college, and, I can't believe the company, blah, blah, blah. And it was just this really downer sob story. Again, this is the place that was for job seekers. But I am nosy, mostly, and as a career coach, I ask a lot of questions. And it turns out, yes, he lost his job as a CFO, but he also owned four apartment buildings and had lots of other revenue streams and things going on for himself, but he so defined himself by the fact that he had lost his job that that's what he presented. So I was chatting with him, and I said, I would have had a much different impression of you if I said, what do you do? I own a couple buildings, and I'm looking for a job, and that's been great and fun and blah, 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 but, what I really want to do is go back to being a CFO. I did that for 20 years at this one company, and I enjoyed doing that, and I'd like to do that again. Well, that's a very different impression. So it's all in how you tell the story. So control your own story. I'm not suggesting you lie. I always tell this other quick story because I think it's kind of funny. I was out for dinner one night with a buddy of mine, and it was a disaster, this dinner. The food was bad, the service was awful, and the only saving grace about the whole meal was the waitress was at least pleasant. But the food was awful. It was just not a pleasant experience. So when the check came, the very perky waitress said, "And how was everything tonight?" And my friend said, "Well, it certainly was a memorable meal." And he said that smiling. And I got mad at him, and I said, "Well, why did you say that? Now she's going to think it was good. She doesn't realize we should have given her, you know, harsher feedback." And he said, "I didn't say it was good. I said it was memorable." Right? So, it's all in how you tell the story and how you, the words that you choose. So, think about that. And if you can't figure that out on your own, again, that's when it's worthwhile. You know, go back to your college or your graduate school, make an appointment with a career services person and have them help you craft your story. Work with a career coach who can help you craft your story. Talk to your friends, your spouse, somebody who's really will be objective and really help you formulate that. The other piece about professional brand, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because we're only on step 5 and I want to make sure we've got enough time to cover everything, is you also want to think in terms of your social media presence. And is that supporting your brand? And are you sort of showing up in life the way you want to be showing up based on your posts? And I will, think about this. First, the first thing you want to do, particularly if you have been working for a couple of years, is Google yourself and see what comes up about you. Usually people's LinkedIn profiles come up first, but see what comes up about you and see if that's what you want to be coming up about you. The next thing, you know, obviously look at your LinkedIn profile and make sure your LinkedIn profile is up to snuff and it's, portrays the story that you want to tell about yourself. Those of you who are just junior, a lot of folks don't necessarily use LinkedIn. You're more Facebook. But LinkedIn, really, if you are interested in being a professional, you got to have a LinkedIn profile and you want to have a grown-up picture, professional picture. This should not be a party picture. It should not be a picture with, you know, somebody with a beer in your hand or, you know, like half cut out with somebody else. You want to be as good as you can be. Make sure that's strong and good and powerful. Also, look at your Facebook page and make sure, again, it's conveying the things that you want people to know about you. And I'm not making a judgment one way or another, but sometimes we post things on our Facebook page or we like particular things that reveals information about ourselves that maybe we don't want to be revealing to employers. You get to make that choice, but just think about that and be conscious of it. There are so many, and I see this all the time, very funny posts on Facebook that I look at, I laugh at, and enjoy, but I don't like them and physically click the button because I don't necessarily want that to be how I'm known for some of that humor or for the political points of view that are expressed. I don't necessarily want that out there. Now, you may not care about that, and that's totally fine with you. All I'm saying is make a conscious choice and make sure you think about it. So control your own story. The sixth thing that you need to be doing is you need to have your resume and cover letters. Now, people always start with this step. They draft their cover letters and draft a resume. But again, I don't know how you've drafted a resume and a cover letter if you've not given some thought to what you want and who needs it. Because a resume has got to be more than just a laundry list of the jobs that you've held. And it's got to be better thought out than just, well, let me just tell them everything I've done since the third grade, put that all on there, and they'll figure out what they need. It's your job to tell your story well. Your resume, your cover letter represents you when you're not in the room. So you really want to make sure that you've got keywords, that it's employer-centric, that it's easy to read, that it's you can glance at it, and words will pop out. And, again, you want to decide what's the most important thing. I often see, for example, people will put their dates on the left margin. Well, your eye is drawn to the left margin. That's probably the least important thing on the resume. It may be the company names are more important, or if you're working for companies that are smaller that people don't necessarily know or recognize, but you've got a really good title, maybe you bold the title and you lead with that. So these are, how are you telling your story in a way that compels an employer or the person reading it to say, I really want to meet with you? Now, it's interesting because there are a lot of professional resume writers out there right now who could help you. I think there's a lot of great resources online that can help you. But again, you want to make sure that you understand a couple things about resumes and cover letters. The first most important thing is there's no one-size-fits-all. So when you get the you must always or you should never, probably bad advice. It's going to depend on your particular situation and who you're targeting. But you want to look at industry samples. And there is a website, sampleresumes.com, that you want to – actually, I'm sorry, it's bestsampleresumes.com. And what I like about this particular one is it will show you, resume samples for accountants, for lawyers, for engineers, for architects, because each industry has slightly different norms in terms of what they want to see. I've often see, for example, on business, people who graduate from business school, there's a whole section on competencies where you list your different competencies. I work with lawyers. You don't put competencies on a lawyer resume. It's just not done. And so you want to know who your target audience is. And so that's where it's worth doing a little bit of homework there. And again, remember, be employer-centric, because now, because of technology, you really want to make sure you've got the right buzzwords. So it used to be you could have one or two different versions of your resume if you were applying to different types of jobs. But these days, you really want to take the resume and make sure that you tailor it. So, it's not like you've got to create it from scratch each time, but it's easy enough to cut and paste and move things around a little bit, change a word here or there to make sure that it looks like that was a resume that was written specifically for this employer. You want to make sure you have as much of their language, the language that you see in the ad on that resume. And now it's time to fill in the blank, to apply to the jobs online. And it's funny because we're all the way on step seven, and it's now we're applying for jobs online. You can't do any of this, the drafting the resumes and cover letters or applying on jobs or even knowing what your professional brand is unless you've done these other the steps before that. So, but now it's time to apply online. And again, I hear advice like, well, how many jobs should I apply to every week? And I will say, as many as you think you're capable of doing. One of the worst things about technology right now is it makes it easy to apply to things where you figure, well, let me just put as many things out there as possible and hopefully something will stick. Really, all you're doing is cluttering up everybody else's inbox. If you really are not in the ballpark, if they're saying they're looking for 15 years of experience and you're right out of college, don't waste your time, don't waste their time. You want to stretch a little bit, but not so far afield that they're not going to talk to you. So I always say the rule of thumb is when you're reading job postings online, look at the bullet points that they have. If you've got 60 to 70% of what they say they're looking for, then I would suggest that you go and apply. If you've got, I've seen people do both extremes where they have everything except it'll say something is preferred that they don't have, so they don't apply. And then I've seen other people who've got one thing that they want and nothing else, and they think that that will be enough. So the rule of thumb is, 60 to 70%, make a compelling argument as to why you think you could do the job and make sure that you do this, you write this well. It's interesting, too, when applying online, and one of our shows was a woman named Susan Vitale from ICIMS. They are the designers of some of these online software systems, and she gave some great advice. And she said, when you are filling out these forms online, fill them out. And it is You know, a lot of times people will try and take shortcuts and just they see attached resume. I would want to do that too, because you're thinking this is redundant. If they would just look at the resume, this would be easier. It would be easier for you, not necessarily for them, because we don't know what's going on their side of the desk. So you really, as annoying as it is, you've got, if you want the job, you've got to jump through the hoops. And that means, you know, repasting everything. One of the things I will tell you as you're applying to jobs online, after you've created your very fancy resume that you will PDF to people, take that same resume and save it as a rich text file. Because when you convert it into just a text file, the bullets and italics and all that stuff get kind of messed up. So what you want to do then is clean it up once. Now when you've got the rich text file, when you cut and paste it into these online things, you only really have to do the cleanup one time, and now it's easier to do. So, always if you can attach the PDF, that's the best way, but sometimes you can't, and it's going to read through it. But proofread everything, and particularly these days, it's even more important because you are cutting and pasting and moving things around. Your cover letters and your resumes have got to be perfect. If you do a sloppy, half-hearted job, an employer is going to make the assumption that that's the kind of work product you put out there. And may not be a fair assumption, but if they've got 50 candidates, 35 of whom could do the job just fine, and they've only got one job, they're looking for reasons to screen you out. Don't make it easy for them. So make sure you proof things. And if I feel somewhat disingenuous talking about that because I'm probably the world's worst proofreader, but I know, because I am the world's worst proofreader, that I have other people proofread my stuff. So make sure you have somebody else do that. So once you've applied for jobs online and it feels like it goes into that great big black hole, what else do you do? You have to do the networking. And that's the piece. I have been singing the networking song for 25 years. And it is about relationships. And so it's not about going on LinkedIn and just trying to link to everybody. Just, hi, will you link to me? I need to understand the purpose of why you want to link to me. I'm happy to link with you if you tell me why. So you've got to put a little effort into that. It is about asking better questions. If you are just saying to your network, I need a job, do you know of any? Most of us, including me, and it's my job to know where the jobs are, I'm going to say, I don't know. If you say to me, hey, do you know anybody at X company? That's, you got a better shot of getting a good answer there. Or I'm thinking about jobs in this industry. Do you know anybody in that industry that I can talk to? When you are networking, you've really got to think in terms of asking a better question to get better answers. So once you see this job online, now the next thing you do is you want to go to LinkedIn and type in the name of the company and see if you're linked to anybody who's linked to somebody there. And then depending on your relationship with that person, you pick up the phone, you shoot them an email, say, hey, Mary, I noticed that you are connected to so-and-so at this organization. I just saw that they had a job, or I'm interested in that kind of work. Would you be comfortable introducing me to that person? And see what happens. Let's assume for a moment that you don't know anybody, that you've got no connections. Well, I know you'll laugh at me when I say this. You know, strangers are just friends you haven't met yet. So you want to find somebody in that organization who could be helpful to you. Think about people at your alumni association from your college or your graduate school. Think about if you went to, you know, a private high school or even a public high school. Do you know people from there? Do you stay in touch with that group of people that somebody might know? Is there someone from your church or synagogue who maybe can introduce you to somebody there? How about in your community? Sometimes I have seen these people at play dates, you know, mommies at play dates, who, you know, just all of a sudden, you know, usually they're talking about their kids and then they have a conversation and they realize that this woman that they've been sitting next to in the playground, you know, her husband works at such and such a place and that's the perfect connect. So So don't be afraid to offer up information about yourself and to ask people questions about them and what they do and where they work. And not, again, it's not about being self-serving or using people. It's about building relationships with others. And the more information they have about you, the more information you have about them, the more you might be able to help each other. And the key with networking is always, again, it goes back to that likability. You never want other people to feel responsible for you. You never want to, as I always lovingly refer to people, as you don't want to show up as Larry or Lucy Loser. You really want to make sure that people, that you're asking them for something that's doable so that you can preserve the relationship and that you ask in such a way that they could say no if they need to. Our ninth step to the things that you need to be thinking about, you need to be prepared for interviews because, you know, you never know something that you sent out 3 weeks ago, they might call you. There always seems to be this hurry up and wait. You know, you send things out and then all of a sudden it's, oh, my God, we want to interview you. Can you come in 20 minutes? And you want to be prepared. So make sure the quick and dirty of interviewing is this. Think about what are the three main points that you want to make sure, no matter what questions they ask you, you're going to make sure that you work these three things into the conversation. And they need to be clear in your head. And then you also want to ask yourself, what's the question I'm most afraid of being asked? And you want to practice your answer to that. Because if you have the answer, you'll feel better, you'll feel more prepared, you won't feel like the deer in the headlights should that happen. And also, it takes the edge off a little bit for yourself. And it allows you to really listen to the questions being asked and to make sure they actually ask you the question before you answer it. A lot of times people are so worried about being asked a question that they volunteer information that and raise the red flag when the interviewer never asked it in the first place. So think about those. What are the three things you want to make sure you know what's the thing you're most afraid of and what would be your response should they ask you, and so you can be prepared for that. And what you always want to try and do in an interview is follow up before you leave that room, ask them what their time frame is. Do you have a sense of where are you in the process? That really helps ameliorate a lot of your anxiety because if you're the first candidate that they're interviewing and you're waiting to hear from them tomorrow and they still have 3 weeks of first-round interviews to go, it would be helpful to know that so that you're not running home every day, you know, oh, my God, there's no messages. How come nobody called me yet? So it's perfectly appropriate to ask that question and then figure out a follow-up strategy to get back to them. And now I'm just going to make the big leap and assume that you followed all these directions and you actually get that job. How do you launch yourself into success? We're going to do a whole show on that. The one thing I wanted to make sure that I mention in all of this, because it applies throughout the job search and through that very first day of work, is it's important to know what the rules of the game are, the written rules and the unspoken rules. Because every industry that you're looking at and every employer that you're likely to join has their own, they're sort of a world that's been operating for a long time before you've joined. And so there are certain customs and expectations of people there. And so people are not going to bend to you necessarily. You've got to figure out, okay, how do I become a superstar here? And you do that by really observing what are their values and what's important to them, and then you want to kind of live up to that and kind of figure out how to fit into that space with them. That's incredibly important. It's not about not being who you are, but it's about understanding the rules and being able to live within those rules as they're written. And I mentioned that, you know, even though you're saying, oh, that's kind of premature, I don't even have the job yet, but those are things that throughout the whole process of doing the research for the company and doing the interviewing and the networking, you want to pick up and learn those things so that you follow those rules. So, again, you're seen as a superstar in that arena. So when the opportunity does come up, you're the one that they want to grab right away. All of this is unbelievably hard work. It's the job search process. I often equate it. It's like losing weight. It's really easy to understand what you're supposed to do, but the execution's a little bit harder. I know eat less Oreos, lose weight. You know, eat less, exercise more, you'll lose weight. That's a pretty easy concept to get, but it's in the execution that it becomes a little bit more challenging. And the same is true with a job search. So you know what you need to do. You need to do the self-assessment. You do the research. You need to network. You need to apply online. You need to interview and tell your story well. So I get it. How do I do it? How do I manage to keep doing this? And it really is about finding ways to keep yourself inspired. There are a couple things. Again, you know, go to libraries. See if there are programs and free services that you can get. The other thing that you might want to do is find yourself a career coach. Visit my webpage. There's a lot of useful information that's there for you. It's www.careerplanners.net. At the risk of doing a little bit of a commercial, I'd say, buy a copy of my book, Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success, because now you've got a resource that has exercises and could really kind of coach you through so that you can coach yourself through the whole process. I would say, too, what I'd love for people, if you have an interest in perhaps getting a free copy of my book, if you like our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/KB Career Planners, you will be entered into a contest to automatically win a free copy of the book. So I will hope that you do that. So if I tried to give you the broad strokes tonight of things that you should do so you can get out there tomorrow morning and take advantage of this busy season. Don't wait. Be active. You should be thinking in terms of, if you're not working now, 4 to 5 hours a day doing some of this stuff. There's plenty to do, so it'll be easy to fill up 4 hours. If you need any further information on any of the things that we've talked about, again, go back and listen to some of our archive shows. You can go to my website on careerplanners.net and click on the Blog Talk Radio button, and it will give you a laundry list and the links to all of those. I would also like to remind you of some of the other great shows that we have on Blog Talk Radio. Tomorrow at noon, we have Gaining Perspective with Coach Andrea Ruckelman. On Friday the 13th at noon, I love this, Get Lucky with the 30-something coach. And being Friday the 13th, that would be a good day to try and get lucky. And then Monday night at 9 p.m., we've got Frank Talk at Monday on September 16th. Check out blogtalkradio.com, Life Coach Radio Network, for a full listing of all of our programs. Go to our archive shows on iTunes. And, again, not only will you get the archives of Get a Job, but you'll also get lots of other really great shows that are on the network that can really offer you that inspiration that you need to get that new job and kind of help you through this process. I hope tonight has been helpful. Thank you for listening for more than 4 to 6 minutes. I hope it's been entertaining and useful. And I wish you all the best of luck. Go out there now, my friends, and get a job. Have a great night.